I'm going to tell you the badger story. But then I have become pleasantly surprised because the other speakers before me in the past few weeks have seen fit to cultivate the ground, to prepare for today. It's almost as if there was a plan. A few weeks ago, Steve Prime led us on an exploration, and he said, "Faith is the confidence that what we hope for will actually happen. It gives us conviction about things we cannot see." And then, I was really happy to hear that. Then, knowing that I was going to be talking about creation, he said, "By faith we understand that the entire universe was formed at God's command, that what we see did not come from anything that can be seen." Steve also referred to Abraham, the man of faith, a hero of the Old Testament, who left his home for a new land in Canaan because God told him to do it. And then Moses came and he preached about heroes. He talked about Moses and Joshua and Gideon and Samson. He spoke about the wars and the evil forces of the Old Testament. And then he went on to identify Jesus as the superhero of the New Testament. And then Moses preached again, and this time about Jeremiah, the son of the high priest, the perfect choice for God's messenger. He identified more heroes in the Olympic Games. And after considering all those champions, Moses asked two questions. What's in it for the rest of us? What happens if you aren't the best? So with these thoughts mulling around, and also some thoughts about this sermon, and there is a story, I am going to tell the badger story. I promised Elijah and Evie that I would tell that story. But there's a common thread running through all of these sermons. Each of us from here, and it happens all during our church year, keep flipping back and forth between two books, the Old Testament and the New Testament. And recall the adage that the New Testament is in the old concealed. The old is in the new revealed. The New Testament is in the Old Testament concealed. The old is in the new revealed. In the Old Testament, we find creation. In the new, recreation. In the old, we find wandering tribes, lost, looking for guidance, looking for a home. In the new, we find an established nation with a capital and a commercial city in Jerusalem. In the old, we have a covenant. In the new, a covenant fulfilled. In the old, we have guilt and suffering. In the new, grace and redemption. In the old, fear. In the new, hope. In the old, a wrathful God. In the new, a loving God. And today, in our reading from Galatians, we have Paul telling us that the law of the old, there's a reason you have a lawyer speaking to you today, has given way, that the slaves have now become the true adopted children of God, the heirs, no longer slaves, no longer living only according to the law. The promise of the Old Testament has become a reality in the New Testament. It just keeps happening again and again and again. And we know that at Christmas, when the prophecies are there and the birth is in the New Testament. This promise becoming reality all happens because of one event, one person, Jesus. Okay, now I have a disagreement with Moses. I challenged him to be here. I challenged him to a debate, and he didn't show. I'm sure he and I will get into it at some other time. But I have this disagreement. I don't believe that Jesus was a superhero. The Old Testament is a book full of heroic deeds. The names are familiar to us. Moses, he parted the sea. Joshua, he crumbled the walls of Jericho. David, he slew a giant. The book is a prolonged tale of bravery in the face of evil and war and armies and famine and persecution. In Exodus, the Ten Commandments come from God, and for centuries, the people of Israel struggle with faith and obedience. Name me a hero in the New Testament. Peter, he betrayed Jesus 3 times in one night. Paul, a man of faith, wandering all around the known world, spreading the new word, but a hero? John the Baptist, a servant, a prophet, but beheaded at the whim of a princess. And there are certainly villains, Pontius Pilate, Herod, Judas. In the end, from the main characters, that leaves us with one person, one candidate, Jesus. And I don't think Jesus was a superhero. This is what I think was going on. Jesus knew something was up. He was different. He was a clever, intelligent rabbi. He seemed to have a gift of healing. He could speak and excite people. And he was definitely a visionary. Around him were all sorts of followers urging him to lead a revolt, to fulfill the ancient prophecies. He spent hours engaging with religious leaders in debate and avoiding trick questions about Rome. The temple was full of money changers. The Romans were taxing the populace mercilessly to support their excesses and their empire. I think Jesus pondered long and hard. He struggled with the temptation of martyrdom. He flirted with the possibility of just staying in the countryside and wandering from fishing village to fishing village. That was a ministry. I think more than ever, however, that Jesus was painfully aware of his commonness, of his humble station in life. Who, me? I could never beat Usain Bolt or Penny Oleksiak. I don't belong in the Olympics. Why would I go to Jerusalem? But somehow he knew that he had something to contribute. Do I, he asked, continue in the tradition of the prophets and the rabbis, quoting the law, the Ten Commandments that have come to us from Moses, exhorting these downtrodden people to have faith, to remember God's promise, to obey the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the religious leaders of the temple? Or, before something irreversible happens to me, do I leave them something more lasting, something that will be a new creation, that will truly help them break out of this slavery, this suffering, and actually become the promise? And that is when I think Jesus decided that his legacy would be simple, really, really simple, not complex, just two commandments. Not 10 anymore, not the Old Testament, just two. Love the Lord thy God and love thy neighbor. There is nothing heroic about this preaching, about what Jesus left us. And yet, these words have lasted for centuries. So we have these two books, sort of a spiritual history of the world as it was known at the time. And we have this great transition, this revelation, whereby heroic stories in the Old Testament become a simple yet powerful philosophy of redemption in the New Testament, where people need to obey and follow in the Old, and people need to think and make choices with hope in the New. All of this because of one person, Jesus. But before there were testaments and before there were stories, if we go back to the beginning, we find this simple beginning. And at the beginning, the point that I want to make is that everything started at once. This brings me to the badger story. I have a favorite book. This is The Once and Future King. Hands up, anybody? If you haven't read this book, you need to read this book. Children need to read this book. Parents need to read this book. Two children and parents before this election need to read this book. This is the story of Arthur, how he grew from being a little boy, taught by Merlin, and became King Arthur in Britain. This is the matter of Britain in one little book. This book was given to me a long time ago by a very dear friend, and I have many, many times turned to the badger story. You see, what happens is Merlin turns Wart, who is the young Arthur, into all sorts of animals. Turns him into an ant, he turns him into a fish, and he sends them into various places to learn about nature and people and what he might need to know about being king. And one of the final forays, when he's almost ready, Merlin is there to make him ready, is he sends him to see the badger. And the badger has a story for Wart about natural selection and about how nature works. And he points out, the badger does, that at the beginning, there was an argument, there often is an argument, which came first, the chicken or the egg? And he says, many people debate about this, but he says, I am in a position, after much study, to tell you that the egg came first. Then he explains that when God had made the eggs, everything was embryos. That's all there were. And as you may know, when you think about the pictures, embryos are not completely formed. They have big heads or they have big hands, things they have to grow and get ready to be born. But at some point, we all start looking the same way. So we're talking about the sixth day here, fifth and the sixth day. God, said the badger, called all the embryos together. And he said, here, all you embryos, come before me. He said, you are all here and you are good. But we have seen fit to grant you a wish. So you may come and you may ask us to change any of the parts of your body for something that you would like to grow up. But be aware that when you change, you will grow into that thing. And you must stick with it. So God sent away all the embryos, and they came back. And they very politely came back, and there they were, standing in front of God. And each one stepped up. And some of them, he changed their mouths, and they became crackers or drillers or spoons. Some of them asked to be boats and to use their hands as oars. And each one came up. The badger said, "We badgers asked for three things, and God gave them to us. We asked that our skin become armor. We asked that our mouths become weapons with very sharp teeth. And we asked that our hands turned into garden forks." The asking and this granting went on, and it took 2 days, the fifth and the sixth. And at the end of the sixth day, just before it was time to knock off for Sunday, there was only one embryo left, and that was man. "Well, our little man," said God, "you have waited till the last, and you even slept on your decision. I'm sure that you have been thinking, what can we do for you?" "Please, God," said the embryo, "I think that you made me in the shape which I now have for reasons best known to yourselves, and that it would be rude to change. If I am to have my choice, I will stay as I am. I will not alter any of the parts which you gave me for other and doubtless inferior tools, and I will stay a defenseless embryo all my life, doing my best to make myself implements out of wood and iron and other materials. If I want a boat, I will try to build it out of trees. If I want to fly, I will build a chariot to do it for me. Probably I have been very silly in refusing your wonderful offer. But I've thought it over, and I hope that this feeble decision from this little innocent will find pleasure with yourselves." "Well done," said the Creator. "Here, all you embryos, with your beaks and your wings and your garden tools, come and see our first man. He is the only one of all of you who has guessed our riddle, and we have great pleasure in conferring on him the order of dominion over the fowls of the air and the beasts of the earth and the fishes of the sea. Now, let the rest of you get along and go and have fun and multiply, for it's time to knock off for the weekend. As for you, man, you will be a naked tool all of your life, though a user of tools. You will look like an embryo till they bury you, but all the others will be embryos before your might, eternally undeveloped. You will always remain potential in our image, able to see some of our sorrows and to feel some of our joys. We are partly sorry for you, man, but we are partly hopeful. And man, before you go..." "Yes," said Adam, turning back to look at the Creator. "Well, before you go," said God, shyly twisting their hands together, "before you go, we just wanted to say, God bless you." Steve told us that in Hebrews it states the entire universe was formed at God's command. Genesis simply said, God made heaven and earth. The badger said, what did he say, Evie? The egg came first. And Einstein said, human beings, vegetables, or cosmic dust, we all dance to a mysterious tune, intoned in the distance by an invisible piper. We've been talking a lot about faith. Faith means that if you load up in Ann Arbor and you travel 5 hours in a car, you will get to Toronto. Faith means that if you get on flight 568 in Calgary, your parents will be there to meet you because you're landing in Toronto. Faith means that if an egg is fertilized, an embryo begins to grow with all its glorious and tenuous promise. Faith means that when you're lying in a hospital bed, things can happen so that you can be with your friends and followers to worship 3 years later. And faith means that our pastor and shepherd should be back here in this pulpit next week. Things seen, things unseen. The visible, the invisible. It's been a wondrous summer. And we have met here many times to explore these questions of faith. So today is merely my attempt to recap these questions and observation of those who have already come to this sanctuary. Susan, Carrie, Steve, Moses, to lead all of us in this inquiry. But before the Bible moves ahead into that ageless transition between the Old Testament and the New Testament, that movement from slavery to the law to adoption as God's children and heirs, there was that one shining seminal moment, a wondrous summer day, just like today, when it all began. The badger got it. The badger knew that at the outset, on the sixth day, just before it was time to knock off for the weekend, with all those embryos milling about with their gifts and their talents, it wasn't so much on that day about man's faith in God, as much it was about God's hopes for man. Amen.